an entire planetary ecosystem. I don't suppose this decision can be reversed. No, and luckily my Sardaukar cordon just happens to be there, and can enforce a strict quarantine. We can't afford to spread this unfortunate plague to innocent planets, now can we? Shaddam let out a long, vicious laugh. See, I've outsmarted even you, Hasimir. Fenring suppressed a groan. The Emperor seemed to be gaining momentum, but in the wrong direction. Richesian Premier Ein Kalamar watched Duke Leto's relief ships land at the Triad Center spaceport, bringing much-needed aid for the victims of the corona explosion. He had thought he was beyond weeping. The Atreides crews provided shipments of expensive medicinals, as well as fish products and pundi rice. Richese was not a poor world, but the destruction of the laboratory moon, not to mention the obliteration of the secret Holtzman invisibility project and most of their stock of mirrors, was a monumental setback to their economy. Old Count Richese, surrounded by his tribe of children and grandchildren, went to the visitors' gallery of the spaceport for the ceremonial function of greeting the supply ship crews. Four of his daughters and one grandson had been blinded in the falling rain of activated Richesian mirrors, and his nephew, Halloa Rund, had been killed on Corona itself. As members of the noble family of Richese, they would be among the first to receive help. The Count was resplendent in thick robes of state, his chest weighted by dozens of medals, many of them handmade trinkets from his family. The old man raised both hands. "It is with deepest gratitude that we accept this assistance from my grandson, Duke Leto Atreides. He is a fine nobleman with a good heart. His mother always said so." Ilban's face creased with a maudlin smile of gratitude, and tears sparkled in his grief-reddened eyes. Within hours, prefabricated distribution centers were set up, interlocked tentments built in court areas around Triad Center. Atreides soldiers worked to keep the crowds in line and performed triage to find the patients who needed help the most. From a rooftop garden spot, where he would not be interrupted, Premier Kalamar observed it all, avoiding contact with the relief forces. Duke Leto was doing his best, and would be commended for it. But as far as Kalamar was concerned, the Atreides had come too late to be treated as true saviors. The Tleilaxu had arrived first. Very soon after the crowds had been burned and blinded by the debris, Tleilaxu organ merchants had descended on Richese, bringing shipments of artificial eyes. Though clearly opportunistic, the genetic wizards had been welcomed nonetheless, for they offered more than hope, more than consolation. They brought tangible cures. Out of habit, Kalamar pushed his gold spectacles up on his nose. He no longer needed the glasses, but their presence comforted him. He stared across the spaceport landing field to where Atreides' troops unloaded supplies. He didn't blink, merely drank in the details with his new metal Tleilaxu eyes. There is much of ruin in everyday life. Even so, we need to see beyond the wreckage to the magnificence that once was. Lady Shando Vernius. Concealed with his men in the cool crevices of a rock formation, Leet Kynes watched a flat salt pan through binoculars. Heat and bright light rippled off the powdery gypsum, creating mirages. He handed the binoculars to the Fremen beside him, then peered into the distance with his bare eyes. At precisely the appointed time, a black ornithopter swooped out of the sky, flying so high they could not hear the whir of articulated wings until the last moment. The vessel landed in a cloud of stirred dust and sand, This time the vehicle had no egregious sandworm painted on the front. Leet smiled tightly. Aelric has decided the guild will play no more games, at least not the obvious ones. The thopter engines whined to a stop, and Leet's sharp eyes detected nothing out of the ordinary. He glanced at the desert men with him, and they all nodded. After the front of the thopter folded open and the ramp thumped onto the hard ground, Leet led his men out of concealment. They strode forward, brushing dust from their stillsuits and straightening their camouflaged robes. As before, four Fremen carried a heavy litter of spice, melange that had been processed and condensed from the ganima, or spoils of war, captured during the raid on the Harkonnen stockpile at Belar camp. They had met the guild's outrageous demands. This time, when the wheeled vehicle rolled down the ramp, the deformed representative wore a modified stillsuit, one that was of poor workmanship and not well fitted. The bottom of Aelric's slick gray suit was loose, wrapped around his fused mass of lower body flesh. The guildsman didn't realize how ludicrous he looked in the outfit. Rolling closer to the Fremen, he acted as if he were an experienced man of the desert. Opening his face mask with a flourish, Aelric remarked in his synthesized voice, "I have been ordered to remain here on Arrakis for a time, since Highliner travel has become increasingly uncertain." Leet did not respond. Fremen tended to avoid pointless banter. Aelric shifted to a stiffer, more formal position. "I did not expect to see you again, half Fremen. I thought you would choose a pure-blood desert man to act as intermediary from now on." Leet smiled. "Perhaps I should take your water for my tribe and let the guild send another representative, one who does not tire me with insults." The guildsman's alien gaze focused on the litter, which the Fremen bearers set down on the sand near the ornithopter. "You have it all?" "Every gram you specified." Aelric rolled his vehicle closer. "Tell me, half Fremen, how is it that simple desert people can afford so much?" Leet Kynes would never tell an off-worlder that the Fremen harvested melange themselves and also stole from the Harkonnen overlords. Call it a blessing from Shai Hulud. The guildsman's laugh was a tinny reverberation from the voice box. "These Fremen must possess hidden resources that we have never suspected." "And how will you come up with the payment next time?" "Shai Hulud will provide. He always does." Knowing the guild didn't want to lose his lucrative business, he pushed back a little. "Be warned that we will tolerate no further increases in the bribe." "We are satisfied with the current arrangement, half Fremen." Leet rubbed his chin thoughtfully. "Good. Then I will tell you something of great importance to the Spacing Guild, and it will cost you nothing. You may use the information as you wish." The rectangular pupils in the guildsman's eyes glistened with curiosity and anticipation. Leet paused to build suspense. In a misguided attempt to harm the Fremen, Beast Raban had obliterated three squalid villages on the fringe of the shield wall. Though Fremen often looked with disdain upon the peoples of the Pan and Graben, men of honor could not tolerate such outrages. The victims had not been Fremen, but they were innocents. Leet Kynes, Abu Naib of all the desert tribes, would set in motion a particular revenge against the Baron, with the assistance of the Spacing Guild. Knowing how Aelric would react, he announced, "The Harkonnens have amassed several large spice stockpiles on Arrakis. The Emperor knows nothing of them, nor does the Guild." Aelric took a quick, hissing breath. "That is interesting. And how does the Baron obtain this spice? We monitor his exports closely. We know precisely how much melange the Harkonnen crews harvest and how much is shipped off-planet. Chorm has reported no discrepancies. Kynes gave him a taunting smile. Then the Harkonnens must be smarter than the Guild or Choam. Aelric snapped. And where are these stockpiles? We must report them immediately. The Harkonnens moved the locations frequently to confuse searchers. Nevertheless, such stockpiles could be found with a little effort. Under the pounding desert sun, the guildsmen considered this for a long moment. All spice came from Arrakis. What if the Harkonnens were the source of the contamination that had caused 2 Highliner accidents and poisoned several guildsmen on Junction? We shall look into the matter. Though he had never been pleasant, Aelric was even edgier than usual. He watched his men load a rich spice payment into the black ornithopter, knowing that the sheer value of this treasure made even extreme risks acceptable. He would test this melange carefully, certify its purity. Aelric's commission from handling the enormous Fremen bribe was worth the unpleasantness of staying in a hellish place such as this. Leet Kynes did not bother with further conversation. Abruptly, he turned and left. His men flowed over the sand behind him. There are those who envy their lords, those who long for positions of power, memberships in the Landsraad, ready access to Melange. Such people do not understand how difficult a task it can be for a ruler to make simple decisions. Emperor Shaddam Corino IV, Autobiography, Unfinished. In all his years of service to House Atreides, Thufir Hawat had rarely looked so troubled. The Mentat glanced from side to side at the servants and cooks going about their afternoon tasks. "This is a deeply serious situation, my Duke. Perhaps we should find a more private place in which to discuss these matters of strategy." Leto paused in the warm clutter of Castle Caladan's kitchens, breathing in the mingled odors of spices, rising bread, simmering sauces, and other foods in various stages of preparation. A roaring fire in a stone fireplace drove away even the damp chill with its cheery orange glow. "Thufir, if I have to worry about Harkonnen spies in my own kitchens, then we shouldn't eat any of the food." The master chefs and bakers worked in short-sleeved tunics, aprons cinched around their generous waists, as they concentrated on the evening's meal, oblivious to the war council meeting in their midst. Frowning, the Mentat nodded, as if Leto had made a serious proposal. "My Duke, I have long advocated that you use a personal poison snooper over each dish." As usual, Leto waved away the suggestion. He stopped at a long metal table framed by narrow drainage gutters, where young apprentice cooks cleaned a dozen fat butterfish that had been brought up from the docks that morning. Leto gave the fish a cursory inspection, nodded his approval. He watched one young woman as she sorted through fresh mushrooms and herbs. She gave him a shy, flirtatious smile, and when he offered her a slight grin in return, she blushed furiously and went back to her duties. Duncan Idaho followed the two men. "We do need to consider all possibilities in the overall plan, Leto. If we make the wrong choice, we doom our people to certain death." Looking at his Mentat and Swordmaster, Leto's gray eyes grew hard and flinty. "Then we must not make the wrong choice. Has our courier returned from Junction yet? Do we have any further information?" Duncan shook his head. "All we can say for certain is that the Highliner carrying Gurney and Prince Romber was misrouted somehow, for a time, but later returned to the Guild stronghold. All passengers disembarked and were held for questioning. The Guild is not saying whether all of them have now been sent to their scheduled destinations." Hawat made a gruff sound deep in his throat. "So they could still be stranded on Junction, even though we expected them to reach Ix more than a month ago." At the very least, Gurney and Romber were delayed. Already the plan is not as we expected.
Plans rarely are, Thufir, Leto said. But if we quit every time one went awry, we'd never accomplish anything.
Duncan smiled. A swordmaster teacher said a very similar thing to me on Ganaz.
Thufir pursed his sappho-stained lips. True, but we cannot rely on platitudes. Too many lives are at stake. We must make the right decision.
Bakers braided loaves of fresh dough with care, buttered the surfaces, and added bitter seeds one at a time, as if setting jewels in a royal crown. Leto doubted the workers were paying special care because he happened to be there. They always put forth a meticulous effort. With Jessica, Romber, and Gurney away, Leto considered it necessary to grasp some semblance of a normal life. He had busied himself by spending extra hours in the courtyard meeting with his subjects, concentrating on his ducal duties, even sending help to Richies for the victims there. Despite the grand and secret schemes that were even now drawing like a knot around the Imperium, he tried to reassure all of his castle staff that the normally serene life on Caladan would continue.
"Let us consider the scenarios, my Duke," the Mentat said.
He did not add his opinion at the moment. That would come during the arguments later.
"Suppose Romber and Gurney do not reach Ix, and they are unable to stir the internal revolution as we had hoped. In that case, if the Atreides troops prematurely engage in a frontal attack, none of the Tleilaxu defenses would be weakened, and our men could be slaughtered."
Leto nodded. "Don't you think I know that, Thufir? On the other hand, what if we delay our response? Romber and Gurney might even now be rallying the oppressed people. Knowing the exact timetable for our arrival, suppose the Ixians rise up and attempt to overthrow the invaders, expecting our reinforcements. But House Atreides' troops do not arrive as we've promised."
Duncan looked agitated.
"Then they will be massacred, and so will Romber and Gurney. We can't just abandon them, Leto."
Deep in thought, the Duke studied both of his advisers. His loyal men would follow him on whatever path he chose. But how to make such a choice?
He watched a matronly chef preparing a fine custard confection in a nest of flaky crust. It had been one of Romber's favorite desserts, back when he had all of his natural bodily functions. The sight of the pastry brought a sudden tear to Leto's eye, and he turned back, knowing his answer.
Leto said, "My father taught me this. Whenever I find myself faced with a difficult choice, I must follow the course of honor, setting aside all other considerations."
He stood motionless, staring at the diligent workers in the castle kitchens. A lot was riding on this decision. But for an Atreides duke, there was, after all, no real alternative. "I have made my promises to Prince Romber, and therefore to the people of Ix. I am bound to go through with this plan, and so we must do everything in our power to assure that we succeed." He turned and led the swordmaster and the Mentat out of the kitchens, back to where they could continue their work. Survival demands vigor and fitness, and an understanding of limitations. You must learn what your world asks of you, what it needs of you. Each organism plays its part in keeping the ecosystem operational. Each has its niche. Imperial Planetologist Leet Kynes. Though it was the primary headquarters of the Spacing Guild, Junction was not a world where any visitor would choose to live.
"I don't know how much more of this waiting I can take," Romber groused. "I want to be on Ix."
Restricted to a passenger recreation area that was far from the majestic Highliner yards and maintenance docks, he and Gurney Halleck walked along a barren black grass field.
Romber thought it must be the site of an out-of-session navigator school, but no one would answer any questions. The midday sun cast dim, murky light. Despite repeated pleas and attempted bribes, the two would-be infiltrators had been unable to send a message to Caladan. The Guild had completely isolated all passengers from the lost Highliner, keeping them prisoners here on Junction, as if trying to bottle the news of the troubled ship and the dead navigator. In all likelihood, Duke Leto knew nothing about it. By now he must assume that both of his operatives were inside Ix, already rallying the disenchanted populace. House Atreides was counting on them. But unless Romber could accomplish something soon, that assumption could be a serious danger to Atreides' forces. With his mental turmoil, the cyborg prince's stride was jerky. Gurney could hear the clicking of the mechanical parts. Hundreds of other passengers from the rescued Highliner milled about on the blackgrass grounds. Now that they were safe, the stranded travelers grumbled with a steady stream of complaints, infuriated at the inconvenience. Junction was escape-proof. They could not get off the planet until the Guild took them. "One comes to know God only through patience," Gurney quoted, a passage his mother used to read from the Orange Catholic Bible. "They have no reason to hold us much longer. The investigation must be almost concluded." What do they expect to learn from the isolated passengers? Why won't they let us contact Leto? Damn them! Romber lowered his voice. "If you could send a message, would you tell the Duke to delay the strike?" he asked, already knowing Romber's answer. "Never, Gurney. Never." He stared across the bleak field. "But I do want to be there when it happens. We have to make this work." Though the prince had been an unacknowledged hero of the Highliner disaster, Guild representatives now treated the two men as ordinary, waylaid human cargo, to be transferred to another ship that would take them to their previously guaranteed destination, presumably with their camouflaged combat pod intact. For a full month, they had been held on the austere world, interrogated about every event, every moment, on the lost Highliner. The Guild seemed very concerned about the origin of the poisoned melange, but Romber and Gurney had no more answers to give. As a small display of protest, the two men refused to shave. Gurney's beard was pale and patchy over his ink-vine scar, while the Ixian prince's was thicker and a little longer on the fleshy side of his face, which gave him bragging rights. The gray, bulge-shaped building that housed the visitors contained a curious mixture of metal-barred cells, offices, and studio apartments. Surveillance comm eyes were everywhere in various states of concealment. Guildsmen watched the passengers constantly. All of the buildings in this zone looked ancient, showing evidence of numerous repairs and alterations. With no ornamentation whatsoever, the structures were designed for function and practicality. Through hidden speakers, a droning voice seemed to come from everywhere at once. "All passengers are hereby released. Proceed to the central processing terminal to arrange for transport to your original destination." After a pause, the voice added an afterthought, as if from a script. "We are sorry to have inconvenienced you. I'll make certain our combat pod gets loaded if I have to carry it on my own shoulders," Gurney said. "I might be better equipped for such labors, my friend, if it comes to that." Romber took powerful mechanical strides toward the central processing terminal, ready to go back home, back to the battleground at last. The war for Ix was about to begin. The Tleilaxu are vile creatures who crawled from the darkest depths of the gene pool. We know not what they do in private. We know not what motivates them. Private report to the Emperor. Unsigned. For weeks, Kater Pilru and the disguised Bene Gesserit Christine worked together in the dark underground passages of Ix. The wiry, androgynous sister's intensity and determination were matched only by Kater's vehement hatred of the Tleilaxu. Drawing upon skills learned during decades of hiding and preying on the Tleilaxu, Kater taught her to navigate the back routes for shelter and food. He knew how to disappear into labyrinthine alleys where neither the Tleilaxu nor the Sardaukar ventured. For her part, Christine was a fast learner and deadly with her hands. Though her mission was to obtain information on Tleilaxu research activities, especially any mention of the mysterious Project Amal and how it might relate to Spice, she relished the opportunity to aid Kater in creating mayhem for its own sake. "You saw something in the research pavilion," she said. "I must get inside there and find out what experiments the Tleilaxu are performing. That is my assignment." In a dim tunnel one evening, they had captured one of the invaders to find out what was taking place inside the sealed laboratory complex. But even with the harshest and most sophisticated Bene Gesserit interrogation techniques, the captive had revealed nothing, probably because he didn't know. Efficiently, Christine had killed him in disgust. Later, Kater killed a lab bureaucrat himself. He wondered if he and his new comrade should start keeping score. With her help, and the knowledge that Prince Romber was on his way at last, Kater showed little restraint. The flames of his vengeance burned brightly. He knew, too, that his brother Demur was dead. Christine had told him of the Highliner disaster over Wallach 9, as well as the second ship that had disappeared into uncharted space. To shudder, he recalled his navigator brother's strange last contact, Demur's inhuman cry of anguish and despair, and then nothing. By the leaden feeling in his heart, he had already sensed the loss of his twin. One night, lying in one of his shielded bolt holes, Kater stirred fitfully on the thin sleeping pallet, unable to sleep, grieving for everyone and everything he had lost. Christine, breathing deeply on an adjacent bed, seemed to be in a meditative sleep. Suddenly, he heard her voice in the darkness. "Bene Gesserits are trained not to show emotion, but I recognize your suffering, Kater. We have endured losses, each of us." Her words filled the shadows between them. "I was a child on Hagal, orphaned in many ways. My stepfather abused me, damaged me. And the sisterhood spent many years healing my wounds, toughening my scars, making me into what I am." Her voice sounded strained. She had never spoken of such things to a man before. Christine didn't really know why, but for once in her life she wanted someone to know her. When he moved over onto her bed, she allowed him to put an arm around her rigid shoulders. He wasn't sure of his own intentions, but it had been so long since he had let down his guard, even for a moment. Christine grew quiet. Her skin was softly sensual, but he tried not to think about it. She could have seduced him easily, but she did not. "If we find a way into the research pavilion, is there a chance we could help Miral?" he asked in the quiet darkness. "If only to end her suffering?" "Yes, provided I can get inside." She gave him a brief, dry kiss, but his mind was already on Miral and the ephemeral relationship they had shared before she was taken so cruelly from him. Furtively, the commando sister paused before the protected doorway. Beyond the bioscanner barriers lay the large central gallery of the lab complex, with its high catwalk-laced ceiling and sprawling rows of tanks on the floor. If she succeeded in infiltrating the research pavilion, Christine knew she would probably have to kill the captive Bene Gesserit sister to free her from any misery she might be suffering. Kater had dressed Christine in stolen Tleilaxu clothes and treated her face and hands with harsh chemicals to make her appear like the gray-skinned men. There, now you look as awful as they do. Fortunately, no one she encountered in the corridors asked her any direct questions. She could duplicate their guttural accents, but knew only a few words in their secret language. Concentrating, employing the most sophisticated Bene Gesserit skills, Christine adjusted her internal body chemistry so that the crude bioscanner would identify her as a Tleilaxu. Taking a deep breath, she stepped into the orange static of the energy field, attempting to get inside to the laboratory floor. Her skin tingled as cellular probes examined her. Presently, she felt a release and stepped through. With rapid and efficient steps, she made her way toward one side. Her eyes drank in the horrific details of strange tank enclosures, experiments that Tleilaxu were performing on female bodies. The air was heavy with the reek of soured melange wafting up from brutalized flesh. Suddenly, an alarm roared through the walls. The bioscanner doorway behind her flickered bright orange. Christine had confused the unit long enough to pass through, but now she was trapped inside the lab. Running as fast as she could, looking from one slack female face to another, Christine finally found the bloated form, the gruesome remnants of Mira Lalekum. She heard excited Tleilaxu voices behind her, thin, squealing shouts, and the patter of slippered footsteps. She also heard the heavier footfalls of Sardaukar boots and shouted military commands. "Forgive me, my sister." Christine thrust an explosive wafer beneath one of Miral's shoulder blades, hiding it between the tubes and pump lines that kept her alive. Then the Bene Gesserit commando dodged between flaccid axolotl tanks, reached another aisle, and ran as fast as she could. So many women, so many spiritless faces. Sardaukar guards blocked her way. Christine fled in another direction, dropping a few more explosive wafers with brief detonation delays. She knew it was only a hopeless stalling tactic. She steeled herself for a fight to the death, even against Sardaukar. She might be able to kill a few of them. Kater would have been proud of her. A stunner caught Christine in the spine, spinning her around, making her nerves crackle. She tumbled onto her back, fell hard, and couldn't move. As the Emperor's soldiers closed in, an explosion ripped the air, vaporizing Mira Lalekum and destroying a whole section of axolotl tanks around her. While fires raged and the smoke thickened, fire suppression systems dumped dry chemicals into the air like a sinister fog. Paralyzed, Christine couldn't see more than a tiny field of view. The dark, rodent eyes of a Tleilaxu master peered down at her. He shook with rage. "You ruined my best axolotl tank! The one I need the most!" Christine had been trained by the Sisterhood, enough to understand parts of their guttural private language. The tonalities, the expressions on their grayish faces, filled in the details she did not know. "Four tanks were destroyed, Master Ejidika," another Tleilaxu man said in a whining voice. Christine shuddered, incapable of speaking. At least she had freed her sister and several other women from their degradation. Leaning close to examine the prisoner, the master touched Christine's treated skin. "You are not one of us." Guards tore her clothing, revealing Christine's slender, pale-skinned form. "A female!" Ejidika ran his fingers over her compact breasts, as he contemplated putting her in immediate pain for what she had done to his special axolotl tank, the only one that had produced Ejidimol on its own. But by now he had others. "A strong female of childbearing age, Master Researcher," one of his assistants said. "Shall we hook her up?" Ejidika thought of the powerful biological agents and personality-destroying chemicals he might use.
We must interrogate her first, before we do too much damage to her mind.
Leaning close to Christine, he whispered, "You'll suffer a long time for this."
She felt someone lifting her and moving her. The air reeked of sour spice. While she lay outwardly helpless, she ordered her body to break down the gaseous components in the air of the laboratory and analyze them.
The spice. No, not real melange. It is something else.
Strong hands hooked her up to a pumping apparatus on an empty table. She wondered how long she would remain conscious. As a Bene Gesserit, she could resist the drugs and poisons, for a while at least. Victory on Ix! She clung to the words Gutierre had passed on to her, wishing she might have shouted them aloud. But she could not speak. Christine felt herself merging into the diabolical Tleilaxu mechanism, learning secrets she had never wanted to discover. On old Earth, kingship died out as the speed of transport increased and the time-space of the globe grew smaller. Space exploration accelerated the process. For a lonely people, an emperor is a guiding beacon and a unifying symbol. They turn toward him and say, "See, he makes us one. He belongs to all of us, and all of us belong to him." The Tleilaxu Commentary, author unknown. Hasimir Fenring's fingers curled into claws when he thought of the treacherous Ajitika and his face dancer assassin. But before he could return to Ix, he had to deal with other disasters here on Kaitane, such as cleaning up Shaddam's messes. The Emperor's private law library contained no film books, texts, scrolls, or written opinions. However, with 7 court mentats and 5 law texts, Fenring and Shaddam had instant access to more information than could be found within a building 10 times its size. They had only to sort through all that data to glean the relevant items. Looking arrogant and imperial, Shaddam IV had posed his question, and now the Mentats stood eerily silent in front of him, sifting through the volumes of knowledge in their minds. Their lips shone from fresh doses of Sappho juice. Their eyes gazed into the distance. Lautex stood ready to record any clause or precedent they might cite. In one corner of the room, a giant alabaster statue of a twisted seahorse spewed a wide flow of water from its stone mouth. The fountain provided the only noise in the chamber. Fenring began to pace impatiently in front of the seahorse. "Normally, it is accepted procedure to obtain a legal opinion before one does something that might cause an open revolt in the Imperium, This time you don't have a reward of melange to give to the guild and show 'em." "We found a loophole for my use of atomics, Hasimir. We'll find a way out of the Bayekal matter as well." "Oh, so you are not bound by the Great Convention because your plague attacks plants instead of people, Absurd. Shaddam looked quickly at his 7 mentats, as if the suggestion might be a genuine possibility. Unanimously, the men shook their heads and continued to ponder in deep mentat mode. "Many houses agree with my position," the Emperor said, pursing his lips. "Bayekal brought this upon themselves through no direct action of House Carino. How can you speak of revolt?" "Are you deaf and blind, Shaddam? There is talk of direct warfare against you, of overthrowing your regime." "On the floor of the Lansrad Hall?"
"Whispers in the corridors."
"Get me names and I will deal with them." The Emperor drew a deep breath and exhaled it in a long sigh. "If only I had great heroes, loyal men like the ones who helped my father years ago." Fenring's eyes shone with wicked irony. "As in the Ekazi revolt? It seems to me that Dominic Vernius and Paulus Atreides were involved in that." Shaddam scowled. and better men, like Zumgaron. Muttering, the legal mentats shared information with one another, since each of them had reservoirs of data that the others did not possess. Still, no answers surfaced. Shaddam lowered his voice and fixed his eyes on the water rushing from the seahorse statue. "Once we have a Mal, these petty squabbles will be irrelevant. I want you to return to Ix and personally supervise full-scale production. It is time to proceed, so that we can wrap up this matter."
Fenring paled.
"Sire, I would rather wait for the final analysis from the guild about the tainted spice in the Highliners. I am still not convinced."
Shaddam's face reddened.
"Enough delays! By the hells, I don't believe you'll ever be convinced, Hasimir. I have heard from the Master Researcher, who would not dare to lie to me, and from my Sardaukar commander there. Your Emperor is satisfied with the results. That is all you need to know."
He became slightly more conciliatory and gave Fenring a paternal smile.
"We will have plenty of time to tweak the formula afterward, so stop your worrying. Everything will turn out well for us."
He clapped his childhood friend on the back.
"Now, get this issue settled."
"Yes, sire, I will depart for Ix immediately."
Despite his uneasiness, he was eager to get back to confront the Master Researcher about Zoal.
"I have business of my own with Ajitika."
Two fresh regiments of Sardaukar recruits from Seleucus Secundus marched in thunderous lockstep down the broad boulevard in front of the palace. The Emperor found them impressive and comforting. These soldiers, led by battle-hardened veterans, would shore up his home defenses, enough to make the Landsrad squirm. Within view of the troops, Shaddam made yet another formal procession to the Hall of Oratory, wearing full imperial regalia. He had invoked his sovereign privilege to summon an unscheduled emergency session of the Landsrad. His advisers would document which of the noble houses did not bother to send representatives. He sat inside his velvet-padded coach, pulled by Harmonthep lions. Ahead, the great hall towered like a mountain, surpassed in size only by the palace behind him. Under Kaitain's always-perfect skies, he rehearsed his words. Like sharks tasting a diluted droplet of blood, the Landsrad Council would sniff out the smallest trace of weakness. "I am Emperor of a million worlds. I have nothing to fear." When the procession arrived at the rainbow of flags above the Landsrad Hall, the trained lions knelt, folding their paws beneath them. Sardaukar guards formed a gauntlet of uniforms so the Emperor could pass unhindered through the towering doors. He had not brought his ailing wife with him this time, nor did he feel the need for the moral support of his advisers, the guild, or Choam. "I am the leader. I can do this myself." With appropriate fanfare, criers announced his arrival. The cavernous chamber was filled with private boxes, raised chairs, and long benches, some gaudily decorated, others austere and rarely used. Duke Leto's concubine Jessica sat next to the official ambassador from Caladan, as if to reinforce the presence of House Atreides.